Well, at the Venice Film Festival this past summer, I didn't watch a single movie. Entirely by accident, I found myself at the virtual reality exhibition on day one and stayed there for the remainder of my time at the festival. Why? Because it was awesome. I knew little about VR going in, but by festival's end, I had tried more than a dozen top-notch experiences across a wide range of formats and subjects. I also got to interview some of the directors exhibiting at the festival. First among them was Thomas Villepoe, a French storyverse designer at Digital Rise and the director of Mandala, A Brief Moment in Time. We sat down canalside to chat about his project, the creative process, and all things virtual reality at the festival. Before beginning the podcast, I'd like to read the director's statement in relation to the project. Mandala is a spiritual journey into Chinese mythology. It combines the pleasure of a collaborative creation with the immersion in the realm of fantasy creatures. Its unique format, a very intimate six-person interactive experience with a live performer, allows for a combination of storytelling tools, social situations and cues, personal dilemmas, and moral conundrums to craft a very special journey for each participant. Every show is unique. A brief moment in time spent with strangers, with virtual friends, just passing by. Happy listening. Tomas, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
The first thing I just want to start out with here is about the project itself. Could you talk to us about it at a high level? What is it? What is it about? What inspired you to create it?
Well, it's very complicated because it's a very new format. I think it's mixing a lot. It's mixing some theater performance, live performance. It's mixing some very new technology, which is virtual reality. And actually, it's using a metaverse platform. So We can talk about that very big word that is metaverse.
What is that very big word?
Well, it's basically it's a new way to talk about having connecting online, connecting a lot of people together online. That's something that existed for a long time, but it's just getting better and better. So we find new ways to talk about it. And it's just more and more immersive and more real. But it's still just connecting people together.
Is it exclusive to virtual reality, augmented reality, or does Facebook, Instagram, Twitter all fall into the metaverse?
I mean, it's just a definition. I don't really care much about definitions, but for me, I think the new part of that is virtual reality.
Right.
It's the fact that you can trick your brain into being somewhere else.
Right.
Because what's good with the metaverse is that you can actually trick your brain. You are in your room, you are in your house, and then you actually trick your brain into thinking you are somewhere else with a lot of people that are actually not here.
Right. It's sort of interesting, like when I was going through the experience, there is a social element on a number of levels. First of all, you have to collaborate with each other. Second, who are in the same room. And then you're also collaborating with the actor who's in a different place. But this experience could ostensibly be done, this collaborative experience, if all of the participants were in different physical locations, right?
Yes, absolutely. What we are presenting today in Venice, Mandala is it's the metaverse version. So it means technically any participant can be anywhere in the world. So right now the six spectators are in the same room, but they could be anywhere. Each of them could be at home, and the actor can be anywhere in the world. And we could also add some other spectators. You can add also passive spectators that just come and see, don't interact, but could see. We could broadcast it with virtual cameras. We could do basically anything.
Why is that interesting to you? What are the implications of that?
Well, see, actually, the The project Mandala started in 2019, and the version we had in 2019 was LBE. So it means everyone was in the same room with the actor, with the spectator, and it was kind of very physical with touching. And then it was the end of 2019 and COVID struck, you know. And we could not do anything LBE because everything was forbidden everywhere with COVID. And there was this shift to something, and we discovered that we can do a lot of things online. And it free us from a lot of constraints.
Mm. I'm like grasping towards some sort of philosophical significance here of, you know, the fact that you are apart but together in a way that, you know, I think social media is isolating in some ways. Mm. You can have lots of Instagram followers or be connected to lots of people on Facebook or Twitter, but while they follow you and you follow them, or while you are friends on Facebook, there's not that real life collaboration, interaction. Whereas what virtual reality perhaps offered beyond the, you know, applications, medical doctors doing surgery and soldiers training for combat, it provides some of that companionship, connectivity, whatever you want to call it, in a way that it's the old social media has. Yeah,
it's engagement in a way. I think what we try to do with Mandala is exactly the opposite of how social media are built now. Like you said, it's a collaborative experience, and we are actually, the whole experience is designed to have people to collaborate and to engage with each other, and we've discovered that it's actually not making things easy that would help that. In Mandala, at the beginning, we put people in a virtual world and they don't know what to do. And you've seen that you're just put in a world and you don't know what to do. And you have to talk together to understand what are you doing here, what are you supposed to do. And some people tell us, oh, but you should help us, you should put some hints to understand what, you should tell us before what we are supposed to do. But no, it's because you don't know what to do that you are forced to talk to each other, you're forced to think.
That's the point.
Exactly. Yeah. And also when you came up with a character, the monkey comes to talk to you and he's going to poke you, and he's also going to let you some silence, some space to express yourself, and it's going to go and fetch every one of you. We have designed the dialogue, the script, so it goes like, hey, who, you, what's your name, where are you from, and it's going to make eye contact, even if it's all virtual reality and you're not even in the same country, it's going to make eye contact, and it's going to engage with you. And there is some awkward moments. You know, there's some moments where the monkey asks a question and you say, yeah, no, maybe, and no one knows if they need to speak or not. So we don't make things easy. And that's actually what triggers the engagement, the collaboration. We force people to think a little bit, to, you know. And I think all social media and all, like, like you said, Facebook, Instagram, etc. They designed exactly the opposite. They designed it to be very easy, very fluid. You don't even have to think. It's the UI is just natural, and it actually make you engage less. It's easier. You go every day, but you don't engage that much because you don't need much effort to go there.
Right. It's very much by design that there is a collaborative, engaging element here. And I think, it's funny you mentioned some people say, no, tell us the answer, tell us the answer. They don't want to engage with each other. They don't want to use their brains. It's sort of when you're scrolling through TikTok or Instagram or whatever, the idea is that you're not, something is switched off. You're just, you're on autopilot. Mm-hmm. And then you invite someone into this experience that has some of the same features, neon lights, animation, whatever. And they think, oh, all right, like I should just be told what to do. Mm-hmm. And then you, Tomas comes in and says, no, no, no. Time to, you have to remember how to socialize. Go back to when you were a child. Remember, hello, my name is, say hello to people. So it's, it was interesting in that way. I know some of the exhibitions here are like solo, or not collaborative. This was one of the first interactive ones that I've done. I did in Sydney. There was one that was like, it was like a shooter, first person shooter, where like zombies were coming at you. And there were four of us walking around a room and we're like shooting the zombies. Mm-hmm. So I had done something sort of a similar design, but not like this.
Okay. And did you have something with a live actor before that? I mean, in virtual
reality? No, they were all CP, whatever, mm-hmm. CPGs.
AI.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But this was cool. Live actor, different places. I wasn't even sure how many, I mean, I should have just looked, but I wasn't sure how many of us were in the room. The six of us.
Yeah, probably six.
Yeah.
It's, actually when, so this is not the first experience that I do with a live actor kind of setup. And where I was working before on different experience that was called Alice Virtual Reality Play. It was one of the first that had a live actor. And at the time, some people went in and went out saying, oh my God, you guys are so incredibly skilled in artificial intelligence. Your AI is so good. And because we didn't say it's an actor, just put the character and we had the interaction. People say, wow, your AI, your chatbot is so good. Mm. And say, yeah, it's a human. It's actually cheaper than chatbot. Sorry. So, yeah, live interaction with a human being is probably one of the most awesome experiences you can have. So.
Yeah. Yeah. How did you get into this line of work? I'm embarrassed to say I didn't read your entire resume, some of it. But how did you get into this? It's all very new, right?
My I mean, the technology is very uninteresting.
Okay. What? Give me the cliff notes, the highlights.
My background is cinema, mm-hmm. storytelling. Mm-hmm. It's always been my passion to create like
production
universe.
Or writing. Or
no, I was actually a cinematographer and a director.
Okay.
From the start. And I was just interested in telling stories basically, and I was also very interested in new technologies and immersive technologies. I worked with 3D. I was a stereographer for a moment with the 3D movies with glasses, and I felt that what was interesting was the immersive part, the part where you get the impression that you're in the movie. And that led me to virtual reality, just because I wanted to be something more immersive, something more powerful to trick your mind. And but I approached it in a technical way, like, oh, this new technology, let's learn how it works. But after putting a headset on my head, I realized very quickly that technology is awesome, but you also have to rebuild the way you tell stories. And you don't tell stories anymore. You create universes. That's why actually we came up with that. We called it story versus, because just to go against metaverse. Because it's what's important is the content. It's a story. It's what you tell inside that technology, inside that virtual world that you are building. And the power of it is also in the the interactions, the content that you are being taught in that technology.
It's interesting to hear you talk about, you know, the creation of a universe. Whereas when you open a book, you're being invited into a world, but you can close the book. When you're watching a movie, you know, a really good movie, you feel like you're a part of it, but you're still a spectator. I think the difference here is that you're an active participant.
Yeah. And it's actually an incredibly different, because the profile, we have problems, like I said, of engagement, and the profile of the spectator, like, are you active or passive? And we had a lot of problems at first with our test in virtual reality, because we would put controllers in people's hands, and they would go, where do I shoot? You know, who do I kill? Where do I shoot? What do I do? Because they had video games in their mind, because they had controllers, they had video games. And we had, so that's an active profile. So they didn't really take time to look around, to understand the story, to understand the world that was presenting. They were like, I'm in a game, the game is a competition, I need to win. I need to understand what's expected from me so that I do it properly and I win. You know, it's that kind of profile. And like you said, when you're watching a movie, there is that magical state of the mind, which is close to hypnosis, where you have a passive spectator and you almost turn off most of your senses. You don't see the cinema around you. You don't see the people around you anymore. You're just inside the movie, like your head is projected inside the movie. But you're also completely passive. And that is what helps you to be identify with the character. So our problem in virtual reality is that we want to have active spectators. But also we want them to be projected in the universe. And usually the trick is that you identify with the character. You take a hero, you put a hero, and the spectator say, oh, that hero is me. But that doesn't work with virtual reality, because in virtual reality, you are yourself. That doesn't change. And even if you go to do the Batman game, the Batman VR game, you're going to look in a mirror and you're going to see Batman. And you're not going to think, oh, I'm Batman. You're going to think, I am me with a Batman suit. Because you always know that you are yourself. That's probably the only thing that you're sure of, that you are yourself. So you cannot play with that thing in virtual reality, with that identification with a hero. So you have to go through a different process where you are active. You are going to the story with an active profile. Yeah, and that calls for very different process.
But when you look at yourself in a Batman suit, I fucking love Batman. particularly Christopher Nolan's Batman, not so much the recent one with Robert Pattinson. Are there people who see themselves as the hero, or in your opinion, no, they will always be themselves in the hero's costume?
I think most of people, when they see Batman in the mirror, they will start to move arms and legs and, you know, dancing, and it makes them laugh to see Batman dancing.
Yeah.
So it's more like a puppet. Like, right. You have the feeling that you are controlling your puppets. But honestly, if someone tells me, oh, I'm seeing Batman in the costume, and I'm really thinking I'm Batman, I think that guy might be schizophrenic, because it's, you know, the identity that you have is quite strong, and it would take a really fucked up mind to be able to turn off that much.
Well, there are minds who can do it, who con men, you know, people who adopt different identities, some people call it imposters or impersonations. Martin Guerre, you know, l'histoire de Martin Guerre.
Martin Guerre is an awesome story.
Yeah.
But I think Martin Guerre was, he was an impersonator, yeah.
Yes.
But
he knew, obviously.
He knew who he was.
Yeah. And it's he like knew that he was an impersonator. That was, he got off on it. Mm-hmm. That was his, sure. That was the pleasure.
Mm-hmm. But it's like actors. Mm. Like actors love to be someone else. And some people say the best actors are the ones who don't really like themselves. Because more like to be someone else, you know.
That's an excellent point. Yeah. I didn't even think about that.
But I think it's still, they still have a sense of I, you know, myself. Yeah. That is very strong.
So the, I mean, my mind's just going now thinking about like the applications of this. You could have VR raves, like parties for people. You could have VR football games, watch the football game live. Mm-hmm. And, you know, be next to your friends.
Oh, that is, you see the problem with football games.
What's like, the problem?
At the beginning of VR, there's a lot of people, obviously, who came to us to do
sports.
A lot of things, and so sports, because it's such a big money, you know, in sports. So they say, let's shoot a football match in 360-degree video. The problem is that when you do that, you have the experience of a fan in the stadium. And it's not what you have on TV. What you have on TV, when you have really that football match, you have the feeling that you have the game, you're watching the game. But VR is so realistic that you actually more like if you are in the stadium, but not seeing the game that much, that perfect. You like, you know, you are farther from the game in VR than you are on TV.
Right.
And if you really wanted to film a football match in VR, you needed to like put a camera in on the field. That would be the only way, like to have that presence on the field, because you feel the presence.
I'm sure someone with money is willing to do that. Or it's more expensive than it sounds.
But that would be fiction.
Mm.
Yeah.
To put a camera on the field? What do you mean?
Oh, because they don't. The game would not happen. I mean, it would, like, you would have to put it on the players or something like that.
On everyone's feet or something.
Yeah, something. Or but even the cat, you know, they have a camera that goes around, but this camera is not allowed to go very low because they have very strict rules. Because if the ball touches the camera, then the money implication of changing the results of the match is incredible.
Yeah.
So it's
not something that...
It's not that easy. Even with a lot of money, it's not that easy.
So where is VR going? I mean, in terms of mass commercial, I have no idea.
Actually, you were saying about VR rave parties.
Concerts and stuff.
There is. And that is something that is happening a lot. You need to talk to...
Like people taking ecstasy in their garages and pretending that they're at a rave COVID?
Yeah, I don't know what they're taking in their garage, but there's definitely parties that are very colorful, I would say. But like,
are you an avatar or yourself?
Yeah.
You could be anything?
You can be... was this... Some big platforms, like you should talk to VR Room.
Yeah,
they do a lot. They did the Jean-Michel Jarre concert, and they do a lot of concerts in metaverses or in VR chat or in other platforms. And there's a lot of people that are really into that kind of social interaction that they can go into VR, go into a concert, go into a party, and really interact with other people through. That's that technology, yeah.
Do you foresee this becoming a kind of... the question is about accessibility.
Mm-hmm.
To whom will this become accessible? Like eventually everybody or just, you know, I don't know, people with a niche interest in... Mm-hmm. I don't even know what to call it, film or video game or something in between. Is this... Or because we're all so fucking lonely... Then it will become a necessity to keep us all from killing ourselves. Like, well, I have no idea. This is some of the first VR stuff I've done. Mm-hmm. I'm curious. where is this going? It's hot. It's taken off. There's a wonderful, wonderful curated exhibition of different kinds of experiences here alone. And obviously the universe of experiences is larger. These are good ones, the best ones. That's why you're here. So, where do you anticipate? There's no right answers, wrong answers. I know you're not a genie, but where do you see this going, maybe?
Well, I think in terms of, like, you were talking about adoption, like, all people are going to have a headset at home. I think now the price has gone really down, and it's affordable for everyone. Like, it's way cheaper than a smartphone. And is everybody going to need it? I'm quite sure some people will come with a killer app that everyone wants to test at least once.
With a what app?
That's what we call a killer app.
A killer app. Yeah.
It's like the app that everyone wants to try. So people are going to buy the hardware just to try that.
Porn, I mean.
Well, actually, everyone says, oh, VR is going to be supported by porn. But there's already a lot of VR porn, and it's not that popular. It's not that strong.
I've never watched it, not yet. But
I can't say on a public podcast that I have.
But yeah, you do see a world in which most middle class families will have.
But
depends on the country and yeah. But
I think the hardware, a lot of people is going to buy some eventually. Now the difficult part is that the time spent in VR is very expensive time in our life. Because when you put a headset, you do nothing else. The reason smartphones and TV is so present in our life is that you can actually watch TV and use a smartphone while doing something else. So it's very cheap time. Like you use your smartphone while you're on the bus or you're waiting for something. And it does not need much engagement. VR needs a lot of engagement. You're not going to
demand
anything else. Yeah, demand it. So it needs to be really, really cool for you to invest 1 hour of your time in that. So the quality of the content and the quality of experience is going to be the key. But I'm not sharing the idea that it's going to alienates us and make us like zombies always in VR. I think we are already zombies with a lot of things. It's not going to change much.
You don't think so?
I don't think not more than smartphones, not more than any technology that is just getting your attention. I hope what I'm trying to do with VR is produce content that is actually require an engagement, because so you're not going to do it while you're doing something else and just not thinking about it and just feeding your brain with useless influx or impulse and of course filled up with ads in there.
Forget the advertising.
Yeah, exactly. It's time of available brain, you know. So, but it's going to happen. Like
the hardware, at least.
Yeah.
The hardware in the household.
I mean, enormous companies like Facebook, Meta, are so invested in it that it's probably going to happen. And the big question is, what direction? You know, what will we watch on that? But it's pretty much, it's like you asked me a few decades ago, do you think computers are going to alienate us? Well, there's a lot of things on the internet that do that, yes. But there's also a lot of wonderful things that you can do.
Yeah, I mean, people get sucked into their computers in the world, whether it's work or a Reddit thread or whatever. I think the hard part to wrap your head around here is that you're literally wearing a pair of goggles
yeah.
and then stepping into not just reading about it, you've like in an alternate universe. And I foresee an issue, I think, perhaps arising in that people will start to prefer their virtual lives to the real ones. That already has happened.
Yeah. Do.
So, oh, I don't know. Or like the sim, you see that movie Her? Like that kind of, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. Or like you'd rather live in The Sims than in your real life. I know, I don't think, but I think, right, VR is not adding to or creating a problem that does not already exist. We are sick. The VR is not sick.
Yes, exactly.
What about you? What's next? Where are you going from here? Not this evening. Venice.
This evening, I don't know.
Venice
is a big question mark for me. But actually, I have another project that is in production right now. It's a project called Jailbirds, and we have
what's it called?
Jailbirds. Yeah. We had the first episode already produced.
Sick.
It was premiered in Tribeca.
Oh,
yeah.
I should have been invited.
Yes, yeah. You should.
Yeah.
So, it was premiered in Tribeca and it made a few festivals. It won a few awards and now we are.
What is it?
This time it's a only solo experience, VR, and it's just a story. So it's just no interaction. It's a passive story and it tells a story that happens in a prison, and it tells a story of one guy who is in this horrible prison, and the guy is always happy, is always okay, is always calm, and he achieves serenity. And the chief of the prison is just furious about that guy because he can torture him and do whatever he wants to him, and the guy is always okay with it. And so it's a story of why is this guy always happy and always cool with everything, and how is the chief warden of the prison gonna try to find the secret and reach out to him. So it's about incarceration, it's about freedom, and it's about like how the institution can try to crush individuals, especially individuals that are out of the system in a way.
Stomping out the individual spirit.
Yeah.
I think there's a Japanese saying, the nail that sticks out gets hammered. And in Australia, we have this thing called tall poppy syndrome. The idea of poppies, the plants, like poppy plants.
Okay.
The tall poppies would get chopped down.
Oh,
If they were higher than the other poppies. So in Australia, you know, there's sort of a culture of that's not conducive. I mean, gross generalization, but it's not conducive to like entrepreneurs, mavericks, people who really want to stand out. I learned that with my like rugged American individualism in Australia. I went to did like an exchange semester at uni there. And the idea was very much like fall in line, wear your leopard print pants. so that wasn't something that was celebrated. I totally sympathize, empathize, understand, whatever verb you want to use. The idea that an oppressive system can sort of crush the individual spirit, and yet you have this resilient motherfucker just being happy. He's like, whip me, beat me, you know, put horseradish in my toothpaste, do whatever you want.
It's like he's like this force of nature, you know, this rock where every wave can crash.
Yeah.
And it's just not moving. And it's
just a good metaphor.
The other guy is furious. It's one voice.
I think, you know, it's funny because he gets even more furious the less furious you get.
Exactly.
It's like Yeah.
And that is, I think that's something I'm into this story because I also reached a certain age. Like maybe when I was young, I was someone who got angry very fast.
Pretty young still.
I'm not.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, when you were younger, you got angry fast.
Yeah, I was quite fast to get angry. And then I really, with the years, I turned completely the other way. And Mandala is a little bit about that. It's very zen and calm and, you know,
Buddhist.
Yeah, Buddhist, exactly. And I just noticed that if someone is very angry at you, and if you are very calm, and if you are very strong on your position, and it's even more powerful, and the other guy is not going to find a way to beat you. So I'm turning now very, very calm person.
They want you to lose your shit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And if you don't play on their level, then they don't know how to... They don't know how to act with you.
Yeah. Well, you talk about this for hours. Stoicism, Buddhism, you know, I'll spare you having to discuss that at length, but I won't spare you from one question, which is about the Buddhist undertones here. You know, we were talking about... the monkey used the example of the bicycle, which is a direct metaphor to nirvana, extinguishing the flames of desire.
Yeah.
The idea of dukkha, of constant dissatisfaction, is fueled by the fact that we're desiring shit all the time. Whereas if we're ever able to nirvana, which is not a verb, it's just something I've created, but achieve nirvana by extinguishing the flames of desire, whether this bicycle is or the metaphor the monkey used for the audience is that he said, you know, imagine you get a bicycle as a gift, you'd be really happy, and then, you know, if someone steals your bicycle, you'd be really sad, but if when you get the bicycle, you know, you smile but you don't get overly happy, then, you know, you can learn to regulate your emotions. Anyway, I'm getting to the question. I probably have already asked it. But the question is about, you know, these Buddhist undertones. What drew you to them? What inspired you to do this? Has it showed up in your other work? Or did you read something or see something that was really powerful to you and then you were interested in this? Or is it always featured in your life? What's the Buddhism stuff about?
Well, I mean, the Buddhism is, I read a lot about it, yes. Just for fun. Just for general knowledge and personal interest. But just like I read the Bible, or I'm interested in religion and, well, more philosophy than religion, I would say. And Buddhism is more philosophy than a religion. And I took out what I wanted from it. Like I wouldn't say I follow Buddha's teaching or whatever, really not, but I felt it was really interesting and I have my personal interpretation of many of those principles that are philosophically very interesting anyway. And I think in Mandala is like, what I wanted to do with Mandala is like something like Buddhism for dummies or something like that. It's not for someone who really knows about the whole philosophy. It's very basic and it's very simple. But it's have fun with those principles. That's what I was trying to do. And just poke a little bit people, like, We go and ask people about their life and we ask what makes them happy. And so I like to do that because it makes me happy. I like to do that because it makes me happy. And then we say, but so do you really think the pursuit of happiness is what should drive your life? And what I'm in all this concept, like, and you said it way better than I do, what's interesting to me is the relativeness of it. What makes us happy and sad actually depends a lot more on who we are than on what's really happening. And I traveled a lot, and I'm very open to how people live in other parts of the world. And when you do that, you realize that your degrees of happiness, your degrees of comfort is so relative. And something here we're going to complain about things that are really so far from what someone living in a poor country will have. And that's what interests me in that concept, that happiness and sadness and anger, and it's really depends on yourself, depends on how you handle a situation, really more than the situation itself. This is not no inner happiness or inner good or bad in situation or objects or whatever.
It's fascinating. No, I'm just... I'm digesting. I'm digesting. I don't mean to leave too long of a silence in the podcast, but...
I'm super happy that a lot of people that come and see Mandala actually knows a lot about those concepts already. And I didn't want to go into a very philosophical discussion inside that, because it's still, it's just fun. It's entertainment.
Yeah. Is it? Is that all it is?
It's
okay. I mean, it is.
Yeah. It's all it is, and it's already a lot. I think. I mean, entertainment is never only entertainment.
Okay.
It's always something, and if you think something is just entertainment, it means that you just missed the message.
Yeah.
You just missed. It's how like watching. It changes your brain.
It's like watching a Christopher Nolan film. Like, what was the recent one? Tenet. I don't know if you saw that.
I didn't saw that. So much people told me it was bad that I didn't.
It's not bad. It's quite good, actually. It's a masterpiece of a lot of things. But there's something there for everybody in that it plays on different levels.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to watch it? I don't want to ruin it.
It's fine.
The second half of the film is the first half of the film played backwards. Not literally in terms of the tape isn't playing backwards, but the film is entirely about, this sort of science fiction concept of like reversing entropy and time, playing around with time. But you realize at the end that it's the first half going in reverse. The characters are still doing stuff. But anyway, but the point is, it's extremely difficult to get your mind around this, to get your mind around a lot of what's going on. I've watched it 3 times. I still don't fully understand it. But there are the cinematography is also absolutely gorgeous. It's just a beautifully crafted film. And so there are those who could ostensibly go into the film, not understand anything. I understood some the first time, but not all of it, and still think, wow, this is beautiful. Mm. So entertainment, I think, it can play on different levels. Maybe you miss the main message, but you don't necessarily miss all of them. In the case of this, I understand what you're saying. There is obviously the Buddhist undertones. There's the collaborative element, the connective element, the fact that we have to, work as a team and, help each other sort of. I overheard, I wasn't eavesdropping. I was talking to someone else, but I overheard you last night talking about some of the other customizable possibilities in the game of, just for the audience, not to get too into semantics here, but making the collaboration more sophisticated,
Yes.
You can't see your collar, but other people can, whatever. It is entertaining. I don't know. Jump in.
Yeah, yeah. what we wanted to do with Mandala, with the interactive, with the interaction, is to have very simple interaction system. Each player has a color, like red, blue, and yellow. Mm. And with that, they're going to be able to interact with objects of the same color. So red can use red objects and blue can use blue objects, etc. So that's extremely basic, and a lot of people will understand that. Not only gamers, because we also have that problems in virtual reality, that you have two audiences, a gamer audience that are really, really skilled into reading the UX design and understanding very fast how you need to navigate in an interactive world. And then you have all the rest, the general audience that have no clue how to handle this kind of tips and tricks. So we wanted to do something that is accessible to everyone. So we use that very basic system. But actually, it's also a system that has a lot of possibilities, and that on that base, like use your color, you can have a lot of very advanced collaborative or interactive systems to use.
Mm. Yeah. What do you see when, I mean, you've seen a lot of people finish. I don't know if there's like a peephole in the director's
room.
Yeah,
there is.
what do people look like when they take the headphones off? Are they surprised? Are they happy? Are they just normal? I don't know.
Most of the time they laugh.
Yeah. They're like, wow, I'm back.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's always when you take the headset off after 40 minutes of VR, you always have this weird feeling of, wow, this is reality. I was somewhere else. It's always like that to me when I take the headset off. It's like, take a second to tune in to this reality. But most of the time they laugh, and it's what I wanted. It's I'm super happy to have an experience where we go into a philosophical conversation about Buddhist principles, and that it's also fun. And people laugh a lot. People laugh together, and I think it's what is also an achievement for me, that sometimes people go in and it's five people that have never met each other before, and they are very silent and they don't talk to each other and they are really shy. And then when they go out, they talk a lot together, and it's. Yeah, we managed to break the ice between them. That's a big achievement.
Yeah, it is a big achievement. Mm-hmm. Do you think that for some, I'm getting to my last question, so I want to be respectful of your time. Do you think that for some it's perhaps a form of escapism? Is that what's enjoyable about it? That you are put in this other world? I mean, a lot of people also, just to be fair, don't really know what they're walking into when they go in. But is it that they've taken a break from their lives or allowed themselves a break? Or
probably. But like you said, there's a lot of things. Like,
and everyone is different, I'm sure.
Everyone is different. And they went into some, like you said, the world you see is quite beautiful. So there's also that pleasure to see something, an artistic creation that is different. There's the pleasure of doing something together, achieving something together. There's the pleasure of meeting characters. I think we try to put all that together, but it's just simple pleasure of life, you know. It's nothing incredible in it.
No.
And it's not overloading of emotion. It's not like VR at first were a lot about that, like roller coasters, like super extreme physical emotions, and you don't need to go that far. Actually, very simple emotions can be really pleasant and can make your day. That's all I want, honestly. If I can make their day, it's great.
Yeah. Well, I think we've covered some good stuff. Is there anything you wanted me to ask you about that perhaps I didn't, or you think we're all good for
question.
Now? I don't know. Any last things you want to add, or you think
We've talked about a lot of things.
No, I was just giving people that opportunity. I'm not fishing.
No. Yeah. I'm actually trying to think about something, but we've talked about a lot of things that I'm cool.
Great. Yeah.